You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 29th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Dollywood Muslim foot washing mop sink, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Did that come through okay?
It did.
Because that's a hard thing to say, Blue Gal. That's a
it
real
came
hard.
Through fine.
Thank you.
So we might as well explain that one. The Tennessee lawmakers outraged that a mop sink might be used for Muslim foot washing.
Good
this
God.
Is over at Video Cafe at Crooks and Liars. These state senators from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, the Republican caucus chairman, Bill Ketron, very concerned about why this sink had been installed outside the House chamber men's restroom. And that it might be to accommodate Muslims' ritual of washing their feet before prayer in the House chamber of the Tennessee state legislature. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're worried about that. You know, what was the intent? It turns out the floor-level sink was installed for housekeeping use. It is a mop sink.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, Sharia law.
But it might have been used by Christians to wash the feet. I mean, it might have been used by Muslims to wash the feet of, I mean, it might have been used
by Jesus to wash the feet of his followers. Well, this is a segue. Let me just segue right into the Old Testament.
Sure.
Because there's a old blogosphere tradition called It's Okay If You're a Republican.
Yes.
And this is another Duncan Black coinage. And I have found it fascinating this week that both... Not only does David Vitter still have a job, but we're planning comeback tours for Mark Sanford, he of the Appalachian Trail.
Yes.
And also David Petraeus apparently is planning some sort of public comeback. So these guys that have their sex scandals are always forgiven.
Well, let's be clear. These are not jobs that they get hired for by a company or a boss. These are elected positions.
Right.
This is the Republican Party, the party of personal responsibility, choosing over and over again to rehire adulterers, fornicators, and otherwise all of the things they condemn those sectarian liberals for doing, they do in spades, and they keep rewarding that behavior over and over again.
But I've had a chance over the past couple of months to study some Old Testament verses, and particularly the book of Joshua. Our Bible study group is studying the book of Joshua.
That explains a lot.
It does. and there's a post I wrote back in 2009 about this whole idea of it's okay if you're Republican, that there is a religious element to this.
Yeah.
You know, Republicans are not only just fundamentalists in terms of, you know, the right amount of God talk will bandage all sins if you're a Republican. But it goes back, I think, to Old Testament tribalism and the belief that your tribe is the defender of the faith, that you belong to God, but these other tribes don't.
Yeah.
And so you're off the hook because God forgives you because you're his chosen to fight for him. And these other tribes don't get written off the same way.
So when
when a Democratic senator, you know, has sex with a staffer.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if a Democratic governor disappeared overseas to have sex with a married woman he had pursued on the internet, as Mark Sanford did. And then you have if MSNBC had disgraced criminals like Ralph Reed, Tom DeLay, and Dick Cheney on. You know, if MSNBC decided that our versions of... Where is our version of Ralph Reed and Tom DeLay and Dick Cheney? Where
now? Al Sharpton.
Oh, well. Okay. Yeah. I guess so.
But it's not exactly like he ever gets out of his box.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And Jesse Jackson also, mm-hmm. who fathered a child out of wedlock and was immediately forgiven. Yes. So there are some exceptions. But it's this tribalism. And I've, as I said, I've been studying some of this. I really want to recommend to people who, regardless of whether you have any religion or religious background at all, or interest in pursuing a religious background, I do want to recommend this Bible translation called The Message, which I have sat in bed and read aloud to you for fun.
Yeah, I know. Again, it explains a lot.
It's a modern translation of the Bible, and it's some of it is just so funny, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because there are three women in the Bible. There's Eve, who is responsible for the fall of man.
Yes, we all know that.
There's Mary, who is specifically chosen by God to be the mother of Jesus and is infallible.
To have a bubble.
And then there's prostitutes.
That's right. That's it.
And that's it.
Well, there's a couple of mine. There's Esther's and things like that.
Well, and Esther and Ruth are quasi-lesbian. I mean, that those verses are used frequently in lesbian weddings, actually. Uh-huh. Of I will follow you and your people will be my people and that sort of thing. But the Madonna whore thing is really reinforced by this Old Testament belief that women are there to be, they're unclean. Women are unclean. Uh-huh. And so controlling their sexuality is part of your duty. And there's a reason why we call it patriarchy.
Yeah.
It grows right out of this Old Testament stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about that in terms of why is it that then Democrats, this is why Republicans, excuse me, have license to hammer Democrats on moral issues. And this, the message has this translation of Exodus 23, which I just found perfect.
By the way, I owned an Exodus 23 in the 70s. It was a sweet vehicle. Yeah. Mileage wasn't so great, but it got you where you wanted
so
to go.
Good. Now, this is Exodus 23, 20 to 24, for those of you reading along at home. Now, get yourselves ready. Again, this is modern translation, modern English translation, and I love it because it is so kind of in your face, readable. Now, get yourselves ready. I'm sending my angel ahead of you to guard you in your travels, to lead you to the place I've prepared. Pay close attention to him. Obey him. Don't go against him. He won't put up with your rebellions because he's acting on my authority. But if you obey him and do everything I tell you, I'll be an enemy of your enemies. I'll fight those who fight you.
Uh-huh.
When my angel goes ahead of you and leads you to the land of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, not making that up.
Uh-huh.
I'll clear the country of them. So don't worship and serve their gods. Don't do anything they do because I'm going to wipe them right off the face of the earth and smash their sacred phallic pillars to bits.
Wow.
That's where the Republican Party is coming from. It is perfectly okay to screw around. And when you get caught, to have your wife standing next to you and get forgiven, or not have your wife standing next to you, and you go off to the beach with your mistress, or you have blowjob queen wife number three standing next to you and you convert to Catholicism and you're still okay in the Republican Party,
mm-hmm.
like Newt Gingrich is.
Yes.
Because you're not part of those other tribes. You're part of God's tribe. You're one of the chosen. So you get to be exempt. And if some harlot entraps you in their wiles, then you know that's why you have to control women's sexuality in legislative ways.
Well, you have to you also have to perform acts of contrition. You have to go on Rush Limbaugh's show and say you didn't mean all the stuff you said.
Exactly.
You have to ask forgiveness from Gary Bauer
and David Gregory.
Yeah. And then you're forgiven. You go right back, you know, you're tagged right back into the game. This is also, I know we've talked about this before, the amazing amount of overlap. This is why fundamentalists were so easily folded into the GOP.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if you believe that the Bible is the literal and inerrant word of God,
mm-hmm.
then every single word of it is true, period. beyond debate, beyond contemplation. It's all true, which means you can't ever admit any error at all, no matter how small. Mm-hmm. You can't admit Michelle Bachmann is nuts.
Yeah.
You can't admit that Clarence Thomas has no fucking business on the Supreme Court. You can't admit that George Bush, your president, ran against deficits or ran against surpluses, rather. You can't admit that George Bush lied you into a war. You can't admit you voted for George Bush. You can't admit ever making any error at all, except that you weren't conservative enough. And that's why this constant erasure of the past, mm-hmm. this constant eradication of reference to anything that happened before today.
Yep.
Because if you were wrong, you know,
then
again,
our faith is vain.
Our faith will unravel, because if there's one error in the Bible, if there's one typo, if there's one transposition, if there's one geographical reference that makes no sense at all, which is why you never study the Bible if you're studying it lightly with a map in front of you. Because, wait a minute, Jesus is actually beaming all over the countryside. This can't have happened in this sequence because it doesn't make any goddamn sense. Well, let's just ignore that. You can't study it historically or contextually. You can't talk about Jewish law at the time and why certain things make sense and certain things don't, and why shit got made up, and why, weirdly enough, the stories that come later and later after Jesus died are more and more complex and have more details, which makes no sense at all. Except if you understand that they're interpolating, they're borrowing traditions, they're making up a religion out of bits and pieces gathered here. They're building credibility by saying, like Moses, Jesus did this. Like Joshua, Jesus did this. They're making analogies. They're making metaphors. But you can't have those things if your book is literal and inerrant. Yep. And so you can never admit any error at all, which is a horrible way to go through life. So this is why Republicans have such agita, because their whole past is nothing but a panoply of fuck-ups, of mistakes, of things that they lied about, that they were chumped into, things they backed fully and completely and loudly and publicly and on tape. And that's the reason I don't think they can reform themselves, because we've accepted as part of our media narrative that we will never – ever hold Republicans accountable for anything. We're never going to throw their past in their face, because if you throw their past in their face, you end up having to mention the fact that, oh, by the way, the host of this show is also complicit, and the corporations that pay for the show were also complicit. So we're just not going to mention the past when it's inconvenient at all.
Well, and I love what Julia Sweeney talks about in her show, in her one-woman show about God Said Ha.
Yeah.
Have you read this book?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, don't tell me how it ends. Ruin it for me.
There's just stuff in there that, you
it's
know,
is astonishing.
Yeah.
And, it's just and bloody and awful.
At a time when it meant something to someone, but a lot of it is just makes, and no one, you know, apart from some very devout Jews, and bless their hearts, actually follows Leviticus.
No.
You know, this is just not. Anyway.
And you've got a book written over the course of centuries.
Yeah.
Oh, millennia, really. If you include all the oldest of the Old Testament. Plus, you've got parts of it written by an oppressed people who were prisoners, who were captives, and who were on the run. And they're desperate to keep their traditions. They're desperate to keep, you know, you can't eat pork because you'll die.
Yeah.
You can't eat shellfish because it'll kill you.
Yeah.
And we need to keep our bloodlines pure because all of these people around us are trying to tear us apart and turn us into them. Yeah. So you start by taking all the dietary habits, personal habits.
And a lot of it is to simply set yourself aside as a and group identity and clan identity is really important at that point in time when you have a nomadic people. Absolutely.
But then you impute all of those things to God.
Yeah. And then you impute all of those things to your clan as the Republican Party or conservatism or Christian conservatism. And you're going to get into huge trouble.
Yeah.
I want to switch gears and talk about David Vitter for a moment, because David Vitter, according to Wonkette this week, is sending out fundraising letters, as Wonkette says, and I do know how to pronounce this word now, diaper baby cosplay takes up a lot of time. And thank you to all the listeners that showed me that I was mispronouncing cosplay.
Yeah.
He is now sending out fundraising letters to do a standalone bill to stop the Obama cell phone giveaway program, which is neither taxpayer funded nor an Obama program nor a giveaway program. But David Vitter is, you know, Diaper Baby is fundraising based on let's stop Obama from giving away cell phones to the coloreds, you know, which is what.
That's exactly what they do. That's exactly what that is. You know,
and I wanted to point out, too, as I was researching this, thinking about the fact that all of we live in an area just outside of a business district that has lots of payday loan places. And one of the big issues in our community that when we start working locally, one of the things that our alderman is very concerned about and the business associations that we have attended meetings about are very concerned about is these payday loan places sprouting up. And actually, city council's passed a law saying they can't be built too close together. And there's a real drive to zone these places out of existence. It's very hard to do. But as I was researching this and realizing what a load of crap this is, I realized, oh my God, all these payday loan places also sell cell phone minutes. And there's a reason why they do that.
Yeah.
You're given a reduced cost cell phone by the telecom companies who have shown that they're good guys under Reagan by funding a lower cost cell phone program for poor people that doesn't include enough minutes for anybody to actually get month to month.
So guess where you end up going?
How does this work out? Who benefits from this really? And no one is challenging, you know, the trust. There's no trust busting going on in telecom companies because they're such nice guys. They fund this through a fee on their bill, universal access fee.
Mm-hmm.
They give, you know, phones to people who can't afford it. Isn't that nice?
That's awful.
And then you
nice.
Go to the payday loan place and you can buy cell phone minutes there.
Well, and this is, again, one more child of email crap that I'm sure you and I both see, which is some video somewhere of some woman saying something about her Obama phone becomes a reason to defund a quarter of the federal government.
Right, right, right.
Any discussion of the fact that this program predates the Obama administration.
Well, and it was a handout to the telecom companies by Reagan.
Is blah, 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 because I saw I have a picture of a black person wanting free stuff.
Yeah.
And that validates all of my deeply, deeply held racism. And there's an entire software package in the head that gets triggered by any mention of any one of these things.
Well, let me read this paragraph from a blog called The Guillotine, which is written by Glenn F. Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. And he's got an article about, turns out the Obama phone is actually the Reagan phone. It's a good, well-researched article. I'll link it at our Facebook page. The last paragraph says, last two paragraphs say, another myth about the phone is it's free or a handout. In fact, it is an opportunity for the cell phone providers to make more money. Providing a basic plan of monthly minutes, which a busy person with a family could easily exhaust, the cell phone providers for the free phone program charge users money to purchase additional minutes. The idea that all users are paying nothing for the service is just dead wrong. But being dead wrong about the facts, being readily racist about the rage, is the essential Republican political paradigm in 2012. It is a pathological and predatory tactic. Of course, as Lee Atwater well understood and eventually apologized for, it was also a tactic and is also a tactic that works.
Yeah.
Effectively in politics, especially if it is allowed to metastasize into a cancerous political meme.
Yeah. And that's
absolutely right.
And that's why, in my personal subjective experience, debunking individual lies is a complete waste of time.
Yeah. Well, and that was the whole point of from the Won't Get thing was your crazy Uncle Liberty has emailed you this already. We know.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter. Again, my personal subjective experience with this is simply that it doesn't matter how many of these whack-a-mole lies you knock down, the same people will crawl back on their bellies to the same liars to ingest the same lies the next day.
Yeah.
And they'll do it for year after year after year. And at no point will it occur to them, wow, everything this person has told me so far has turned out to be wrong. Why the fuck am I still listening to them?
Because
freedom.
Yeah,
because freedom, that's why.
Yeah.
Because shiftless Negroes, that's why.
Yeah.
And there is no salvation for these people. There is no hope for these people. They are doomed. They're fucking dead. They're soul dead. So debunking them one by one individually makes no sense at all. It's a complete waste of your time. The only thing I have found, and I believe you would agree with me on this since we've talked about it enough times, is working at a very local level with people in ways that lets them recognize the humanity of the people that they demonize at the national level. And secondly, go after the people in the middle.
Yeah.
Because the people in the middle are the ones who keep giving these fuckers airtime and spotlights and television shows and keep putting Richard fucking Pearl on my TV for some reason and keep putting Paul Wolfowitz on my TV for some reason and keep dragging these liars and discredited assholes back over and over again, David Gregory. And until someone walks up to David Gregory in a public place and kicks him in the balls and demands to know and will not let him up from the hammer lock on the ground, why do you keep putting Newt Gingrich on television? No. Don't give me your Booker's number. You fucking answer me.
Mm-hmm.
And zaps him with enough truth serum to say, because my corporate masters pay me to do it. Because his Bookers make sure that I get to go to country clubs. Because my lifestyle depends on putting liars on television.
Right.
Because I work for GE.
Yeah.
Until you get an answer like that, it's just a fucking clown show.
I work for the military industrial complex. That's who I work for.
That's what they want. That's who they want on television.
They pay me to do this, yeah.
Until you get an answer like that, nothing's going to change. Nothing in the media whatsoever in that level, at that network level, at that 20 million, 30 million viewer level is going to change.
Speaking of people who are desperately trying to stay in the middle.
Yes.
Aaron Schock.
Yes.
Totally not gay congressman from this area. He is
totally not.
He is not our congressman.
No.
Let's be clear.
By about 20 yards. We can see him from our house.
I could bike to his office from here.
Yeah.
And I'm not a long distance biker. But I could bike to his office from my house. I can almost see it from my house.
Aaron Schock, who's getting to be a national Republican.
Right. And he's handsome and he's got the abs, you know.
He does.
He's got the abs and the look and the blue eyes and the nice hair. And is
but that belt in, that belt with those shoes?
Oh yeah.
Really?
No.
Really?
The light teal belt with the white pants and the red and white gingham open shirt and the giggling on a chaise longue by the pool in your loose trunks there. Yeah.
He's never gonna date your daughter, okay?
Well that's what I have had to say that at my church, you know. Totally not right for your niece, Aaron Schock, if I can say it that way. But he's being targeted by the Club for Growth. For Growth, who is known so well for supporting the candidacies of Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch.
Yeah.
Wants to primary Aaron Schock.
That's Senator Akin. And Senator, wait a minute, that's not.
No, it's
never mind. I got that backwards. I'm sorry.
And there's rumors that Aaron Schock might want to run for governor.
Yeah.
Why would anyone want to be governor of Illinois? I have no idea. But the thought is that that's somewhere he wants to go. And there's this website, Club for Growth Action's new website, primarymycongressman.com, which goes sniffing for liberal voting records among Republicans.
I have to interrupt here. Breaking news, Blue Gal. Do you mind?
No.
Right at this moment, as we record this on Wednesday, because we have a very busy week coming up. Yeah. I glanced up at my muted television, and I saw the most horrifying thing I've seen in days.
Oh, my goodness.
Young Luke Russert is interviewing Tony Perkins from the...
Oh, my God!
On my fucking liberal television.
Everybody got that? Luke Russert is interviewing Tony Perkins.
Uh-huh. Not the nice Tony Perkins who dressed up as a woman and stabbed people. No, the crazy Tony Perkins.
Crazy Tony
Who runs the Family Research Council. That crazy one. And you know what I wish, Blue Gal? You know what I wish? I wish I could say everybody take a drink.
Yeah.
Because I wish it was fucking science fiction.
Yeah.
But this.
Well,
this...
and Heather over at Crooks and Liars at Video Cafe made a really good point this week that we didn't have Klansmen on the TV in the 60s to present the other side.
For balance.
Of the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but we didn't have.
We had Dixiecrats in Congress. I give you that.
Yeah, we did. Sure, we did. Of course, we did. But
We didn't go out and find the extremists.
Mm-hmm, and put them on television.
Put
for
them on
balance.
Television for balance. And now we do.
And we didn't have 12-year-old children, whose only qualification for being network news anchors, network news people, is that their daddy was Luke.
Too bad. May he rest in peace. But
but. You know, just the number of articles written about the sidelong glances people give each other at MSNBC. Yeah, Luke Russert's really coming along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in a few years when he starts shaving on a regular basis, I'm sure he'll be great. But there are like 400 other people who
Our 14-year-old son would do a better job being skeptical of an interview candidate, you know, of an interviewee. Than Luke Russert is.
Yeah.
Okay. Getting back to Aaron Schock.
There you go.
There's a very interesting blog. I don't know if other states have this, but we have this, and you're very familiar with capitalfacts.com.
I am.
It's history. It started with the fax machine.
It sure did.
And this actual reporter, Rich Miller, went and walked the halls of the state legislature.
Yep.
And found news and faxed it to subscribers. And it turned out to be very valuable information and good reporting. And he has made a paying blog model of actually being on site and blogging. Because what he does is actual reporting, actually knowing people and talking to them about what's going on at the state house in Illinois.
He dug out a niche for himself.
Yeah.
Nobody gave him.
Yeah.
And moved basically into the Capitol building.
Yeah.
And kept walking around, would listen to rumors, would do what all reporters used to do, hang out at bars, listen to stories, follow them up, check things out, talk to people. And it became sort of the inside tout sheet of what was really, really going on in state government.
Yeah.
And it turned into, it literally went from a fax-based newsletter.
Where he actually faxed it out to people. Yeah.
To a blog.
Yep.
And so it is one of the indispensable Bibles of state government in Illinois.
State government, right, in Illinois. I don't know if other states have this sort of thing, but in any event, Rich Miller has on his blog from February 28th, the letters written to Aaron Schock from Club for Growth. And the Club for Growth president's name is Chris Chocola.
Uh-huh.
As in Count Chocula. No, C-H-O-C-O-L-A. Okay. And they have texts of the letter and the letter, a statement from Aaron Schock's chief of staff responding to this. And what we all love, and hat tip Princess Sparkle Pony for linking to Capital Facts, the last line of Chris Chocola's letter to Congressman Schock is, "Congressman Schock, please stop pretending to be a fiscal conservative. The voters of Illinois' 18th Congressional District are not blind. They can tell when someone is pretending to be something they're not."
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you're saying that to this extremely handsome, toned bachelor, lifetime bachelor congressman.
Yeah. You're firing a shot across the bow.
You are.
And it was because, I mean, Aaron Schock is a conservative Republican.
He is. And his one of the responses he has is, look, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce gives me a 93% approval rating. Yeah. You know,
but not 100, right?
Because it's not 100. Well, he would not vote for any bill, to his credit, for understanding who is going to vote for him in his district.
Right.
He would not vote for any bill that cut farm subsidies.
Yeah.
And even if it meant going along with Obama on crop insurance,
yeah.
and you had to vote for a stimulus bill, he's not stupid in that regard.
Now, when it comes to farm subsidies, I think we have everything backwards in this country. Let me just get that straight up front. We should be funding, subsidizing, supporting, whatever you want to call it, the people who grow food locally and sell it to local restaurants and make food, good food, grown regionally, available at extremely low prices to poor people.
Even to Walmart. Even if it's to Walmart.
Yeah.
If it's a local farm selling local produce and making it available to people that shop at Walmart, go for it.
And that farmer should have access to more than one market.
Right.
That farmer should be able to sell at many and be able to make people compete for his or her product.
Yeah.
So just so we're clear, farm subsidies in this country, the way we do them are fucked in the head. They're completely ass backwards. Having said that,
Aaron Schock knows his constituents.
Aaron Schock's commercials were a bunch of farmers.
It was hilarious because Aaron Schock, as I say, is
does not look like a farmer.
Is pretty.
Yeah.
And they'd have these farmer. Hello, I'm Daryl.
Yeah.
And they'd all have their
cat hats or whatever
caps on and their plaid shirts. And
Aaron Schock made sure I got
climbed off of this tractor to tell you that I like Aaron Schock because he got us the farm bill.
And he never laid a finger on my daughter, which I think is good.
Not.
Yeah. And that's fine. And again,
these ads are really funny.
Let's be very, very clear. Whatever Mr. Schock's orientation may be, I don't have a problem with it.
Well, I do in that he supports the Republican stand on gay marriage.
Let me repeat this. I don't have a problem with it. He's in the wrong party.
Yeah.
I have a problem with being monstrously hypocritical if he is what I think he is. But I don't really care. It's none of my business what his orientation is because I'm a liberal and I believe that. And very.
We don't have a problem with him being gay. We have a problem with him being a Republican.
Republican and a hypocrite.
A hypocrite.
And wanting to be a congressman from Southern Illinois, where you can't be a congressman unless you're a Republican. He wants to be a senior politician. He wants to be a high-ranking elected official. And you can't be that in certain places unless you play to crazy people like the Club for Growth, unless you give them what they want. Secondly, he is doing what every congressman is supposed to do, constituent services. His job is to go to Washington, D.C., represent the people who elected him, get them what he thinks they need, and that exchange – however grubby and mercantile it might seem, is the basic political agreement between elected officials and their constituents.
And his office is very centrally located, expensive rent district, corner of two very main drags in downtown Springfield with a big, huge sign on it. And somebody is staffing that office at all times to help people with their disability claims, with their Social Security, with their passports, whatever they need. He's there to do that.
Yeah.
So, and that's his job.
Mm-hmm.
That's every congressperson's job.
I'm not going to ever vote for him.
No.
But for doing what was necessary to get his constituents what they think they need.
Right. A farm bill.
He's being penalized as not being real. He's not real conservative.
He won't cut farm subsidies, which would be political suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The purity, I mean, there are purity police on both sides of the aisle.
Sure.
Our left-wing purity police, we have a problem with them sometimes.
Yep.
And we say so loudly, and then our comment sections fill up with angry people who say we don't appreciate what's really going on, dude. You don't understand, dude. But again, I get the issues. What I find frustrating and amusing at the same time is this sense that, no, you have to be with me 100%. Yeah. Not just 100%, but you have to use my vocabulary.
Problem, though, Driftglass, is that the purity police on the left do not have the kind of money Club for Growth has.
Absolutely.
And you can buy a seat on the board of Club for Growth for $100,000.
Yeah.
And you can destroy someone's congressional career with ad buys that say, you know, he's really a liberal. And then he's done. You want to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court?
I do, in passing.
And that is the only news out there this week, by the way. But we're going to glance over it a little bit because these decisions are not going to come down this week.
But the headlines are full of it.
Yeah.
Are full of that news. So we're not telling anybody anything new. But Two things bear repeating. One is the fact that there are some states in this country, some political municipal areas in this country that are just fucked in the head. And you can't say that at the national level, but it's just true. But the first thing I want to talk about briefly is the Loving versus Virginia decision, which I've written about in my blog almost since the very beginning. It is the seminal case of the Lovings who were married, who the state of Virginia said, you cannot be married out of state and return to the state. If you do, we're going to prosecute you. It was section 20-59 of the Virginia criminal code, of the Virginia code, which classified miscegenation as a felony, miscegenation being interracial marriage, punishable by a prison sentence between 1 and 5 years. And as I've mentioned before in this podcast, it bears repeating, where in the hell did people in Virginia ever get the idea that you could legislate who you marry? Who gave them this notion that you get to decide that grown adults of a certain kind get to be married and get to have all the societal privileges, all the perks, all the contractual, all the agreements, all the financial stuff that go with being married, along with all of the social acceptance and so forth? And the answer is, of course, the Bible. Mm-hmm. They went to the Bible. They didn't read the Bible that you and I read, Blue Gal. They read that other conservative Bible. And the judge said, and again, commit this to memory because it comes in very handy during conversations. The trial judge said, Almighty God created the races, white, black, yellow, Malay, and red, and he placed them on separate continents. And but for the interference with his arrangement, there would be no cause for such marriages. The fact that he separated the races shows that he did not intend the races to mix. You know, when you're...
So bringing slaves over to Virginia was actually contrary to God's law. That's what he's saying.
Well, you know, there's exceptions for that. That's just for labor, Blue Gal. That wasn't for marriage. But when your legal argument begins not with the Constitution, but with Almighty God.
Yep.
You need to shut up.
Well, and this is when we get into, you know, the tradition of blog against theocracy.
Well, this is why.
And this is why abortion is also all these abortion bills are theocracy.
This is why you should keep your eye on Clarence Thomas.
Ah.
Who is married to a nice white lady.
Yes.
Clarence Thomas, who for so many, many reasons should not be on the Supreme Court at all. Again, there's lots and lots of things you'll never hear discussed at the national press level. Clarence Thomas is a ditto mark underneath Tony Scalia. Clarence Thomas' entire legal history on the Supreme Court has been a Republican, partisan, bootlicking hack who just takes whatever Tony Scalia says, puts ditto marks under it and says, me too, and shuts the fuck up.
And both of them work for the Koch brothers.
Both of them are absolute partisans. Both of them have no trouble speaking their partisan minds in front of partisan groups, which a generation or two ago, no Supreme Court justice would have dared to do. His wife, Clarence Thomas's wife, is a crackpot Tea Party lobbyist who, as you might recall, drunk dialed. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do.
Mrs. Clarence Thomas drunk dialing Anita Hill saying, oh, you should be ashamed of what you did to my husband 20 years ago. So these are the dregs of society. These are the self-loathing outliers that the Republican Party scrapes together to make itself look like it's a party that has any kind of diversity in it at all. You get a stooge and a self-loathing hack like Clarence Thomas, who is married to a white lady. So if Loving versus Virginia had not been passed, Clarence Thomas could not be married to the woman he's married to right now, which is hilarious because the reasoning behind Loving is exactly the same as the reasoning behind Proposition 8 and the underlying argument in front of the Supreme Court today, which is, where the hell do you get off? Since you can't claim any actual harm, you can't claim any financial harm, you can't claim any societal harm, you can't claim anything but that would cause the state to have any interest in keeping these two consenting adults from Marion. You have to fall back on, but Jesus would cry. It would make God very, very angry. And that's where Gary Bauer was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gary Bauer, or some sort of waxwork dummy that looked a lot like Gary Bauer, was propped up in front of the Supreme Court, literally thumping a Bible, talking about the God of Abraham. You know, these liberals, they got Hollywood on their side. They got all this money and elite media. What do we have? We have Western civilization, and we have the God of Abraham. And that's it. That's the entire argument. They keep trying to ram their fucking Bible. Not my Bible, not my Jesus. They're crazy, conservative, fundamentalist, misinterpretation, grotesque misinterpretation.
Patriarchal.
Of their Bible. Yeah. They're entirely selective, cherry-picked, hateful, theocratic, intolerant, bigoted version of the Bible. They keep trying to ram that thing into the Constitution. And they keep trying to rewrite history so that the Founding Fathers really wanted this to be a theocracy. And that we're just missing that point in all of the discussion they had about it not being a Christian nation, and we're deists, and no, we're not a Christian nation. So you bring it up to the present time, and you find that in the living memory of people who are still walking the earth, the Supreme Court heard a case about two consenting adults who wanted to get married, and a state told them they couldn't because it would make Jesus mad. And it made white people, racist white people, feel icky. And the Supreme Court said, get that shit out of here. And now the Supreme Court is hearing exactly the same case, except in this case, it's about gay people who make basically the same sorts of bigots feel icky, yep, who are using the same Bible to prop up their stupid reasoning, their bigoted opinions, and asking the Supreme Court to validate that. And there is actually someone on the Supreme Court. Maybe this is the reason Clarence Thomas was born. There's actually a person on the court who is in an interracial marriage that would have been outlawed if the very court he sat on would have followed the kind of reasoning that his friend Tony Scalia thinks it should be following. So keep an eye on what Clarence Thomas does.
And well, I would not be surprised at all if Clarence Thomas says, well, that's okay for me, but not for anybody else.
Because of what you said before.
Yeah.
The OKR baby.
Yep.
It's okay if you're a Republican. I'm not a big guy. I'm a Republican. And, you know, Clarence Thomas knows which side of the bread his butter is on, and he knows who holds his leash, and he is absolutely cool with that. I would hate to be Clarence Thomas. I'd hate to live in whatever hell awaits him once his God asks him why he did the terrible things he did. And when he shows him his mortgage, I don't think God's going to respect that too much, but I got a really nice house out of it and a really cool job. But it's worth watching, and we'll see in a week or two where Clarence Thomas comes down.
A month or two. We don't know when these decisions will come down. But we are going to actually have to stop there and bring up our economic stuff next week, I think, because we're at 48 minutes. So,
all right.
And we've got a long Stump the Chump question. So,
and I do want to mention one last thing.
Yeah.
Because it made me laugh that Mississippi is the surly teenage boy of the American state.
Because when they told him to ratify the 13th Amendment,
after 140 years, he said, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. Get on my back.
We live with that.
Really?
I'm getting dressed.
I've already called you three times. I've told you in 1890, 1920, I'm doing it. All right. I'm doing it. Get off my back. And by the way,
he's a really great stepdad. But teenage boys are teenage boys. They just are.
And my teenage stepson is a wonderful boy, wonderful young man. And I was the same way.
Oh, no, I think that there is so much self-recognition in your face when you see that. And you get the, no, wait a minute, dude, did you put on deodorant this morning? Ah! Oh!
But, and then you invoke the ladies' clause. But
the ladies are going to hate that stink, dude. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
By 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're not going to have a single lady want to stand next to you.
Oh, okay.
We got a letter. We've gotten a lot of great letters, and I'm stacking them up and sort of saving them for reading on the air. But we got a fun letter from Danny, and he emailed us and said, hey, after work, I stopped and got a Venti Quad Caramel Macchiato with soy. I rarely stop and get a fancy coffee. As I was listening to your podcast while in the drive-thru, I felt it polite to buy you each one.
Aww.
Thanks for all you do, Danny. P.S. attached is a photo of my long distance cheers. And he's holding up this big, huge coffee. And that is sort of the standard by which we ask for donations. If you can afford a venti quad caramel macchiato with soy, which is actually, as I wrote back to Danny, that's your drink.
If that is that used to be my that used to be my drink. I've dialed that down a little. I don't. You will not see me at a Starbucks these days. Mostly.
No, we don't. We buy local. But if I was at a drive-through espresso drink place with extra money, and was going to get you something, I would get you a caramel soy latte. Would I not? Maybe vanilla.
And that's
like that.
I love.
But it would be soy, and it would be milky, and it would be sweet.
And that's
why. And
it would
have lots of espresso in it.
And that's what, and that's why I love you. Because it would occur to you that, oh, yeah, what do I get? That son of a bitch, screw him.
No, I would know exactly what to get you.
Yeah.
But we would not you, as was the special last week at our local place, a marshmallow Peeps.
No.
Latte.
And I
don't
would
ask.
I would ask them the same question I ask everyone with that helpless look on my face. Do you sell nice yarn?
And that's why I love you.
Yeah. Because, you know, that big box of acrylic yarn you have that's for $1.99, is that the good yarn? And the lady looks at me. Yeah, sure. That's nice.
No,
that's...
it's not. Don't do that.
No, see, I'm not stupid enough to make those decisions on my own.
No. He says, what do you want? And I point to the yarn on my screen and say, for Mother's Day, I want that.
By the way,
order that.
As we mentioned, my sister and mother were in town.
Oh yeah,
last week, and just listening to the you and my sister doing that code talk,
Geek off.
You're talking about sheep and varieties of sheep and their genetic qualities and the type
and
of.
And then we pull out the initials and talk about KPPPM. Oh yeah.
I just I enjoyed observing it in the same way. As I said before, I enjoy listening to people talking about obscure comic books from the 70s. I have no idea what you're talking about, but I appreciate the obsessive interest and recognize it as something similar to my own. Speaking of which.
I'll close the circle here and bring up a religious cartoon.
Okay.
Which is KPPM, which your sister and I threw around over the coffee.
Yeah.
Stands for Koigu Painter's Palette Merino, which is a dyed yarn from Australia that is just marvelous. And there is a cartoon put out by Franklin Habit, who's a well-known knitting cartoonist in the knitter's world.
Sure.
And
why wouldn't
it is a Christmas cartoon. Uh-huh. It is Mary sitting in the creche with baby Jesus and there with the sheep and the cow and the so forth. And here come the three wise men. And Mary opens the box and she says, Koigu! It's not gold, frankincense, and myrrh anymore. It's high quality premium merino yarn from Australia. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
And all the knitters would laugh at that.
Now,
each week we post to our Facebook page and website at least one internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. But this week we have three one picture. This week's internet kitties are Flea, F-L-E-A, Chester. And depending on whom you ask in the family, the third cat is named either General Sterling Price or Pumpkin Baby. I'm going with Pumpkin Baby.
Yeah,
I like that name.
Pumpkin
Baby and Friends. You can find them at our website and Facebook page. And you can send us your internet kitty at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us at any address, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Union, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise.
I have a question, Blue Gal.
You have a question?
Yeah.
You sound like our youngest child.
Question? I'm just stalling because I don't want to go to bed.
Yeah.
This is episode 173, right?
Right.
We've had an internet kitty every week, right?
No, we started that sort of midway through.
Okay.
We've got 70 or 80 internet kitties.
I was going to say, we are approaching 100 internet kitties, I think.
We're going to approach 100 internet kitties this year. Yes, we will.
Damn.
And I'm putting those in a, I should link to those. I'm putting those in a Flickr set.
Uh-huh.
They're all together in one big group. So.
Because why wouldn't you do that?
Because, and why wouldn't everyone want to go look at every single internet kitty ever published?
In your copious spare time, you're putting together an...
A Flickr set of internet kitties. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that you were getting that done because I was worried that we would have...
You were so worried about the Flickr set of internet kitties? Okay. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties have no interest whatsoever in watching Tilda Swinton sleep.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying.
So we're going to play Stump the Chump with this one very, very long email.
All right.
From Magnolia ePublishing. And
okay.
They're friends of the podcast.
They are. They are. They have done well by us.
They do some stuff. And so I say that with the understanding that getting an email from this person about science fiction
is a thing.
He's going to know what he's doing. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And he writes, Blue Gal, I love Stump the Chump. And I have to play, too. Uh-huh. Here are my questions.
Okay.
Give him time to think. No.
No.
Or you can lightning round style. And there's no prep allowed, so you two can fit this segment in whenever you have the time. He doesn't have to get them exact.
Bless your heart. Give me about 10% bullshit room. I can make anything sound plausible.
Okay. There are two parts. The first part is 8 questions, and the second part is 10 questions.
Oh, I've heard of this at law school.
Yeah. I mean, this is just really intense.
All right.
Okay. Part one of two. Ready? Stretch? Yeah. Ready to go? Okay. Yeah. Part one of two, 8 questions. All questions are from pre-1987 written science fiction novels. Huh. All right. Identify the story where the aliens look like.
Oh,
this
shit.
Thing.
Okay. All right.
8 of them.
All right.
This is good. Identify the story where the aliens look like baby elephants.
A Footfall.
Footfall. Wow. You got that one right away.
Larry Niven, I think.
Yeah,
maybe Niven
and Cornell. 1986.
Not much of a book.
It's a hint. Herdmaster Lead Me.
Uh-huh.
But, wow. Okay. That was quick. Yeah. All right. Here's another one.
Oh, well, that was used to justify a lot of bullshit Reagan-era weapons.
Oh, great. Great.
Or play with them in a fictional form. So, yeah. But, okay.
Number two. Identify the story where the aliens look like a biblical demon with wings. And if you want a hint, he's given hints here for some of these.
Off the top of my head, I would guess John Varley, demon, but it really isn't. But I'm thinking demon. So give me a hint.
No, that's not it. But let me give you the hint. One of their first acts on Earth was to ban bullfighting.
Oh. It's Childhood's End.
That's right. Arthur Clarke.
10-foot-tall or 12-foot-tall demons. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Identify the story where the aliens look like a super intelligent shade of blue.
I have no idea.
Hint, it was refracted into a prism so it could attend a ceremony.
It sounds suspiciously Star Trek-y, but I still have no idea.
It's A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Well, okay, it was funny. I didn't have my funny hat on.
Identify the story. I'm going to just keep going. This is Please. Lightning round.
Yep.
Identify the story where the aliens look like giant white rabbits.
There was a Star Trek episode. It was Shore Leave. It was written by,
this is a book.
Oh, book.
Story. This is a book or a story. Hint, Elder Mary Sperling became one.
Oh, yeah. This was one of the Lazarus Long stories.
Who wrote
Robert
it?
Heinlein, Lazarus
oh, Heinlein?
Long stories.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to go with, it wasn't Universe. That was one of the stories. Methuselah's Children.
It was Methuselah's Children. That's right. Very good. Number 5, where the aliens look like an interstellar gas cloud. Now, that's like 300 Star Trek episodes, even though I know there's only 79.
Well, but you said novel.
You said novel, yeah.
So, there is, here's the thing. There is a novel by Spider Robinson called Stardance.
Yeah.
Which you should never have made sequels to. But it was a wonderful novel. One, I think the Hugo and the Nebula is an awesome novel called Stardance, where the aliens were, in fact, gas. And he also wrote a novel called, what was it called? I want to say Mind Killer, but that's not it. Where a scientist invents something that increases your smell ability to smell by a factor of 50. Hmm. And it kills off most of the human race, which is a terrible thing. And it makes us able to detect the fact that these gaseous aliens that have always been here in the upper atmosphere are still here. I can't think of the name. It was his first novel. But I can think of two Spider-Robinson novels where the aliens were, in fact, gas.
Okay.
So, that's right?
The hint he has for the one he's thinking of is when it enters solar orbit, it accidentally causes enormous environmental damage on Earth. And I'll give you another hint. It appears to me to be the title of the story also. The name of the alien.
When the aliens appeared near Earth orbit, they caused enormous political damage. And I don't know, remember environment, but that is also Stardance.
Okay. So. Well, the one he's thinking of is The Black Cloud by Fred Hoyle from 1957.
Oh, no, you got me.
All right.
Yeah, but I claim right of that, in fact, never mind.
Well,
interstellar
gas clouds are pretty ubiquitous in science fiction, yeah.
Your personal opinion.
Personal opinion. All right. No hint for this one, number six. It's too easy. Giant metal robots that walk on three legs.
Oh, War of the Worlds.
Okay. Number seven. Human-sized insects whose chairs humans found difficult to sit in. Humans classified, this is the hint, humans classified their abandoned ships as ones, threes, and fives because of how many humans they could be modified to hold.
Ooh. See, abandoned ships has me stumped. Rendezvous with Rama has human beings trying to figure out what the aliens look like based on their artifacts. And there are insects there. Mm-hmm. But that's in the lightning round, that's the best I can come up with Rendezvous with Rama, which is probably wrong.
The human-sized insects are called the Heechee.
Oh, okay. That's the Fred Pohl?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't think I ever read that.
The Gateway Trip.
Yeah, the Heechee Rendezvous. And Yeah. I'm familiar with it. I don't think I ever read it, though. Sorry, Fred. I missed
number eight.
Many, many, many novels. So
the last and final one for this section, when the score can really change.
Oh, okay.
Where the aliens look like car tires and roll in the wind like tumbleweeds.
Oh, fuck me.
It was written under the pseudonym Kilgore Trout, but it is not written by who you think it's written by.
I would have to go with Kurt Vonnegut, yeah, but I know that's not
written by Kurt Vonnegut.
I know that's not right.
It's written by Philip Jose Farmer.
I should know that.
Enos on the Half Shell.
Yes, I read Venus on the Half Shell, and I'm sorry.
And he wrote it under the pseudonym Kilgore Trout with permission from Kilgore Trout.
I'm gonna give my standard bullshit answer that Venus on the Half Shell is not science fiction.
Okay.
Which may or may not be true. I don't. I remember reading it. I remember laughing about it.
Magical fiction, is it?
I don't remember anything about it.
You don't remember
all.
Anything about
other
it.
Other than it was written by a character that Kurt Vonnegut set free.
Okay.
But if it's Philip Jose Farmer, Philip Jose Farmer has written some awesome books, including the River World series. And he's from here, I think. He's from Peoria, Illinois. He's a great writer, and it kills me that I didn't know that.
All right, part two. Ten questions, all right. Quotes from pre-1992 books or movies.
Okay.
These are from memory, and so may be inaccurate.
Okay,
but
so they're made up quotes.
Yeah, where did stuff that... I didn't go back and check these quotes. Well, we can argue about them. Where did this quote come from?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, we have to get these ships back to commercial service. And the hint is Bruce Dern.
Bruce Dern. From a novel?
From a movie.
From a movie.
Bruce Dern as a tree hugger.
Okay. It's Silent Running.
Yes, it is.
With a little robot. See, if you'd given me the names of the robots.
Oh, no.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie, I think they were. They were the progenitors of R2-D2. Really,
number two.
Kind of a cool special effect. Anyway, good movie, not a great movie.
Number two. You'll be aged 50 years for this. And the hint is, who wears short shorts? Sean Connery wears short shorts.
Oh, man. The only Sean Connery movie I can think of is Outland. And I'm sure that's not it.
It's Zardoz.
Zardoz. Oh, God.
You'll be aged 50 years for this. Okay.
Okay.
Number three. I'm sorry I said those things about Mickey Mouse.
Minnie Mouse.
It's Minnie Mouse, is it? Okay.
Okay.
Hint, the hint is Louis Gossett Jr.
Oh.
Bun in the
oven. Oh. Enemy Mine.
Yes. Very good.
Thank you. By Barry Longyear, I think.
Yes. By Barry Longyear. Very good.
Thank you.
Number four. You don't get it. I rode on the outside of a Tandy.
Tandy.
A Tandy was an armored tank for cleaning up nuclear waste and so radioactive that riding one was a death sentence.
Oh.
According to this.
I have no idea.
Brother to Dragons.
Yeah.
Charles Sheffield. Okay. Number five.
Oh, that's a book.
I believe so. Yeah.
Not a movie. Okay. All right.
There is insufficient data for a meaningful answer. And the last line of the story is, let there be light.
All right. I have two separate answers.
Okay.
The first answer is Robbie the Robot in Forbidden Planet. Insufficient. But I know for a fact that the last line of Dark Star, which is John Carpenter's first movie and a hilarious really low budget movie, made it for like $4, was Let There Be Light.
Hmm.
So.
And his answer is The Last Question by Isaac Asimov from 1956.
Oh, okay. Well, fine.
So I don't know.
You're going to throw Asimov in my face. I think I'm going to take some partial credit for that.
Partial credit.
Everybody knows Isaac Asimov, but how many people know John Carpenter's Dark Star? Let me put it that way. Who's your nerd now? All right, what else we got?
Number six, out, down, go, rightwards.
Oh, man.
I give you the hint, you're going to get it.
Well, then you should definitely give me the hint.
Identical twins, one leaves on a journey near the speed of light.
Oh.
Out, down, go, rightwards refers to how much the language had changed while he was gone.
That was Robert Heinlein, mm-hmm. twins, probably both redheads. Race for the stars, run for the stars.
Time for the stars. All right. The next one, I believe, is a written work.
Okay.
Number seven, God's laws. One, follow Gary. Two, be clean. Three, teach God's laws. And the hint is, it's kind of like the Puppet Masters. I don't know what that is.
Everything is kind of like the Puppet Masters. Puppet Masters, that's Robert Heinlein.
Well, this one is Master of Space and Time by Rudy Rucker.
Okay.
1984.
You know, the Puppet Masters became the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
It's the same story.
It was a template, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of writing.
I accept the fact that it was like the Puppet Masters, but that's like saying it was like time travel. So, okay.
The hint for number eight is Heinlein. Period.
All right.
That's your hint. Number eight. Got any dragons you need killed?
Oh, Glory Road.
Yeah,
oh,
very good.
Yeah. That's a good book.
Now, number nine, I know the answer to this one. Uh-huh. It's too easy, so I'm going to read the hint to you.
Okay.
And then I'm going to switch the hint and the question, because to me the question's too easy. All right.
Why? Why are you doing this to me?
Number nine, tell him yes on one and no on two. Which one was yes? Go ahead and destroy Russia, or number two? And it's a movie.
Tell him yes on one and no on two. Okay, give me the...
Oh, you'll get it.
Yeah.
John O'Connor, Install My Oscillation...
Okay. Yeah, it was Buckaroo Banzai.
Right.
Sure, across the fifth dimension.
Movie. Yep.
And, of course, that's... Yeah, that's a good point. That was too easy.
Too easy.
Too easy. If you'd given me John Big Boutet.
Too easy.
Yeah. If you and by the way, the second reference to War of the Worlds in this pop quiz.
Well, and if I'd given you No Matter Where You Go, There You Are.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's another line from that.
But
or anything from Hitler's speech to Nuremberg.
Yes. Character is what you are.
Are in the dark.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Number 10. I believe this is the last one. Let me see.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, this is.
You.
The Gostak distims the dashes.
I have no idea.
And the hint is nobody can explain what that means. Ah. It's Amazing Stories, 1930. The Gostak and the dashes.
Ah. All right.
He threw that in as a joke. Uh-huh. Miles Breuer, Breuer, from 1930. Wow.
Okay, this is the story where Hugo Gernsback predicts the sardine can and x-rays. Oh, God. I don't. But I put myself up to this. I put myself out there as some kind of expert.
You knew that he was going to write you some of these challenging questions.
Yeah.
And so you have two. And why don't we throw these out here for our listeners?
Yes.
And see what comes back. And yes. And if you want to answer these, we'll send you something. We'll send you a postcard from Drift Class.
Uh-huh.
If you answer these correctly this week.
And you have to do it without
Googling it. Which Harlan Ellison short story uses grapefruits as an indexing experiment in information retrieval?
Yes.
And number two. Which Harlan Ellison short story was based on an encounter with Veronica Lake?
Yes.
Okay. Nerd off.
Yes.
Send those in. Send them to us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to stump the chump with Driftglass, don't send them to Driftglass. Just send them to me. And that is Blue Gals Blog, BlueGalsBlog, @gmail.com. And you can send those, and I'm going to end with Kennedy, Don Johnson. Ah. I don't know. Which is what Magnolia E-Publishing says.
Yeah.
That's how he signed off, so.
Yeah, and that's, again.
Can I explain that?
Sure. As I recall, in one of Harlan Ellison's late 60s, early 70s short stories, maybe Santa Claus versus Spider, I don't know what they're, but in some alternate history, the line of presidential succession was Kennedy. Okay. And Don Johnson was given his film big break in A Boy and His Dog, which is a cult film with Jason Robards as Jason Robards was in it too. A film that almost no one has seen, but it gave Don Johnson his career. And it also, one of Ellison's stories, Shatterday, you could fairly say gave Bruce Willis his start. It was one of the first episodes of the new Twilight Zone, which has now become the second of two or three versions of the Twilight Zone. That I was at a convention in Milwaukee, I think, and Ellison was there, and he brought the film, and he showed us these that he made Shatterday, which is a very good story, into this thing with this young actor named Bruce Willis. So there you go.
Wow. Bunch that's enough trivia for anybody for 1 week.
I know. My head is full of this junk.
Happy Easter, everyone.
Happy Easter, everyone.
And we'll be recording another podcast next week. It will be kid-free. Huh? So
I don't know if I'm going to do live blogging of the Ten Commandments.
You might do that.
Because it's one of my very favorite movies.
And it is Walking Dead season finale this weekend.
It is.
And it is the premiere of the new season of Doctor Who this weekend.
I know.
There's just too much going on.
It's too much.
We love you guys. Thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in touch with us. And bye.
Bye.